Hello and welcome to what is now Season 5 of Pebble in the Pond podcast. My name is Sam Stewart and I am the CEO of the Australian and New Zealand Mental Health Association. Each year, ANZMHA hosts several leading mental health conferences which give us the opportunity to connect with incredible industry leaders, lived experience speakers, researchers, academics and frontline workers as they share fascinating stories and projects which are changing the face of mental health within our community. Listen in as we go one-on-one with these inspiring people and dive deep into their work. It is truly a privilege to bring you their stories. Our podcast episodes may contain content which could be triggering for some people. If you need support, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or visit the Get Help page on anzmh.asn.au. Join us for Pebble in the Pond each Tuesday and let's get into Season 5. Abby Cooper is a youth mental health consultant and lived experience coordinator at Batir. Only 22, Abby has been working in the mental health sector for the last 5 years. By sharing her experience in help seeking and having a few missteps along the way, Abby is passionate about advocating for young people within the community who are looking for services. Today we chat around Abby's personal story, the changes she'd like to see in the lived experience workforce, and some of the power shifts she'd like to see within the greater sector. Thank you, Abby, and welcome. Abby Cooper, thanks so much for joining me here in the room and feeling comfortable to share a bit of your story, your journey, what's going on, what you've been up to and where things are heading with you and all things Abby Cooper. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
It's a pleasure. I'm excited to have you here in the room. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, let's tell us a little about yourself and your journey so far. Where's life taken you?
Yeah, well, I'm 22, so not far. I am a youth mental health consultant and a mental health advocate, and I also work for an organization called Batir as a lived experience coordinator, so I have a couple hats in that direction. Yeah, I kind of joined the mental health world maybe 5 or so years ago, working with Origins Youth Advisory Council, which kind of started this big journey of me doing advocacy work and a lot of kind of governance work or kind of high-level project work as well. And then, yeah, I think maybe 2 years ago, I really wanted a bit more of like one-on-one connection with young people. I was doing a lot of admin-y kind of tasks, which is great, but you kind of lose that connection, I think, and that real tangible impact of the work that I was doing. So I really wanted to get that back, which is when I started joining Batir, I became a storyteller for them and actually developed my story and my lived experience journey into a story that I shared in schools and started doing that and felt that really like tangible impact there, which was really cool. And yeah, joined their team as like a full-time worker in the last year. So joined the kind of world of working as a staff member in and not just casually in mental health, which has been a journey.
Yeah, awesome. And where's home for you?
I would say north, but I realize it's probably not very contextual. It's called Yeppoon. It's a small town I was raised in central Queensland, land of Drumble country up there. So I was born in Rockhampton, raised in Yeppoon my whole life. It's been part of my identity. Yeah, I love Yeppoon. I love the people and the community and that kind of connection is really important.
Great spot.
Yeah, it's really beautiful up there, up on the coast. It's like just inland. That's the wrong word. It's just coastal of Rockhampton.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Great spot. A little coastal town, nice beaches.
Yeah, very pretty powerful place to be raised, I think. I was always on the islands or on the beaches or four-wheel driving. So a lot of that shaped, I think, how I connect with communities and, yeah, the way my mental health has kind of shaped itself.
And how was it being youth growing up around Yeppoon? Was there some challenges? Was it difficult?
Yeah, it was – parts of it were incredible. I, like, quite literally spent, you know, weeks at a time on islands and snorkeling the Great Barrier Reef, and in that aspect of things, you can't really ask for a better upbringing. Definitely were challenges at times. I think the mental health system there is, in any regional community, it can be a really challenging place to go through something, and that was kind of where my family's journey started. My dad actually was the first person in my family to experience mental health when I was around 10, and then my brother again a few years later, and yeah, we really experienced, I think, probably the worst of the system, or it's hard to say that. Definitely some of the negatives, a lot of stigma in those small towns is really everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it would have been challenging for yourself and for, you know, your family growing up, seeing, you know, people that you love and care for go through such challenges and not really knowing where to turn or not really wanting to seek help, perhaps.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, we were kind of doing our best, really. My parents really were trying their hardest to look for solutions, especially to complex mental ill health. In a small town like that, the stigma's everywhere, the services were kind of not super equipped. I remember the first time we went to Headspace, it was like a 9-month wait list. So it's just jam-packed everywhere. Yeah. It's pretty full on. And yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, it was a lot of gaps really everywhere. And it was really hard to kind of find trust in clinicians as well and trust in the system, because it's just such a small community. Where you get your, you know, medication from is where your friend from high school works, and your clinicians are often someone who your whole family sees. Your GP, like your whole family would be seeing your GP for your whole life. So it can be really challenging to feel like you have that trust and relationship and connection with that trusted therapist or clinician. Yeah.
And how about your own mental health journey? Tell us a little bit about that and how you've overcome your own challenges and what that's led you to do.
Yeah. It's been a journey. I wish I was thinking to myself before I came here today that I wish I had like a neat diagnosis to kind of put into a box, but it just really doesn't fit into that for me. I think being a carer was a huge part of my journey with lived experience, because when I first started kind of experiencing symptoms, I'd had my brother who has a diagnosis of schizophrenia and my dad who also had quite complex mental health and diagnoses. So it was quite challenging to be maybe on the like lower end of that and start experiencing some of symptoms of depression, anxiety, and feeling really low and not knowing what to do with it. And yeah, knowing there was a lot of complexity there with my brother. And yeah, it was pretty hard for me. I think having that split focus and having so much history in the family, it really made me feel like I couldn't reach out, and that my parents maybe couldn't handle me reaching out for help or couldn't handle another child in the family who was suffering. But
what age was that you think that you first started experiencing signs of depression, anxiety?
I was probably 14, 15. Yeah. So okay. Started
high
in
high school.
It's like grade 10 in high school. I mean, who knows? I feel like you can draw those symptoms back quite a long way sometimes. But yeah, it was just, we were going up to the hospital to visit my brother after school quite often. And yeah, I just remember being pretty isolated, and I spent like every lunch break in the library for about like half a year or a year, which for me was probably not very typical, and just was trying to understand what my family was going through, was kind of withdrawing myself and isolating, and wasn't really sure how I fit into that picture. And yeah, I kind of didn't end up seeking help until a few years later. I pushed myself into my academics and tried to do that thing we do where we ignore the problem. And yeah, it kind of came back to bite me again in uni when I was, pretty typical for a young regional kid to move to the Big Smoke, move to Brisbane and get a uni education. And yeah, I ended up dropping out like 3 weeks in. I'd worked really, really hard to get into my degree and dropped out pretty quickly because I just wasn't coping really. I hadn't reached out for help. I'd tried in Yeppoon and it had gone really badly for me. And I think, it was a really important step that I took when I reached out again and had that support go really well.
And with services a lot more accessible in Brisbane, did you find?
Yeah, definitely. When I first reached out for help in Poon, I remember the therapist saying, or the GP saying, like, you just need to come back when it's more severe, essentially. I was struggling with, you know, my eating habits and things like that. And it was kind of, you had to reach a certain BMI to be considered, well, really just be considered at all. So I was pretty much sent home straight away. And then when I presented in Brisbane, I just spoke to my GP, and I remember it was just like nothing. It was no big deal. Like, I just said, you know, I feel like this is coming up again. I'm really anxious. I'm not leaving the house much. I'm really struggling to, you know, manage my intrusive thoughts and things like that. And he was kind of like, okay, cool. We'll get you on to, you know, a mental health care plan and take those steps from here. And pretty much been in therapy since then with a few different therapists. But yeah, 5 years later, still go monthly, fortnightly.
Yeah. And so did you find there was a bit of a shift going from regional area to the city? Did you feel like the barriers dropped a little bit for you because of the options available, because you didn't know as many people and you thought maybe you can just
have a clean slate and go to somebody that doesn't know you and maybe won't judge you? Is that the sort of thing that you felt?
Yeah, there was a lot of different factors, I think.
Yeah.
It was definitely the fact that anonymity is really important.
Yeah.
The friends I had around me at the time, though, like I remember, I mean, I've always had pretty good supports, pretty good family and friends. But I remember a friend really explicitly saying, you know, you need to get some support here and that I will support you. I think they said, if you can't get yourself help and get yourself to a GP, I will drive you there. I will take you there myself because you really need that support right now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I think that validation was really important to me, especially coming from a family where the level of complexity was there. So yeah, I think it was kind of, yeah, when you're just managing something like schizophrenia, it's hard to feel as a child who had maybe like mild depression to feel like you had a place in that world and in that system. So that was really important to me to have that validated. And I had a young GP as well. I think that was pretty nice. They're quite old in Yeppoon. I'm not sure why. It was just good. I think it was just the right time for me and
yeah.
It has to come at the right time. And it probably came at a time where I was more accepting of it as well
yeah.
And really pushed. I really did advocate for myself, I think, in the system. And I asked questions. I really said time and time again that, you know, this is what I want. This is what I want to be looked after and looked at and really kind of advocated in the system, which I think went a long way. And when I didn't connect with a therapist, I kind of said, okay, I don't feel like this is working. I might try someone else until I found someone I had a really strong connection with and where that trust could really develop pretty organically.
It's an important part, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a process for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Having that rapport with your therapist, it can really, in a lot of instances, make or break your experience, can't it, with mental health as far yeah. as feeling like you're getting the right help at the right time.
Yeah, definitely. It's so important. I mean, that trust is really everything when you're trying to open up your life experiences to someone. And I remember my first session with my psych and we just talked about nothing really. I don't think she asked about my mental health until maybe halfway through or 20 minutes in. To the session, which might seem like a waste of money, but it was probably the most important thing that she could have done at that time was just ask about me and who I was and establish, you know, that kind of parameter of, yeah, what I wanted and who I was as an individual without just diving straight into who I was as someone who was mentally unwell or, yeah, was experiencing some hard time.
Yeah, I mean... As a person, as a young person growing up and having to care and support family members with mental ill health, I mean, it would have been some struggles with that at such a young age as well to try and even understand what was going on, let alone your own challenges, right?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it necessarily gets easier as you get older, but it is a really big thing. It's hard to kind of be going through all the motions of being a young person and working out your identity and messing up and things like that while you've got a lot going on at home, no matter what that kind of might look like. I think it can be really challenging, and it certainly was for me to kind of figure out who I was and find safety. And yeah, in a regional community too, like I still have grown up with most of my best friends now. So I think trying to find your identity is even harder in that kind of environment, but let alone when something's going on that kind of pulls your attention away and pulls your focus away. But yeah, we got there at the end.
What do you think for young people growing up, what do you think are some of the gaps that we need to do better? I mean, you mentioned before there's some long waiting lists, the wait times to seek help. Tell us a little bit about where you think there needs to be some more resources perhaps or some changes to the system to improve mental health outcomes for people that are struggling.
Oh, there's a lot, I think. Yeah, pretty much every part of the system really could be improved. I really think we need to develop a bit more of a wraparound approach and really look at it, the whole of a young person and not just their symptoms and how they're presenting in the moment, but what happens when they go home and what their study is like and what their, you know, journey has been as a human being. There's a lot of just, yes, sector things. We really need to figure out our workforce and clear up some of those wait lists because they are just... are huge, and I think we need to look pretty hard at you know, help seeking was a really big part of my journey, but we know that a lot of people are reaching out for help and are not finding that help, I suppose, a positive part of their journey. And a lot of the young people I talk to have had more than one attempts at help seeking before they find something that works for them. So I do think that there is some tidying up there that, you know, we need to listen to clinicians, listen to young people and figure out what does work, because it's too many people are kind of reaching out for support and not getting what they need first go. Yeah.
If we look at the stigma in the community, I mean, this, you grew up in Yeppoon, or could just as easily any other regional area in Australia. But I mean, tell us a little bit about that experience and the community's reaction and support towards mental ill health in the community from your experience.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they were quite supportive of me. You know, I'd done a lot of work in the community. I was like a pretty big volunteer. I'd probably like a pretty stellar example of a community member, I think, at the time. I was always out volunteering and, you know, cared a lot about my studies and things like that. So I think when it came time to my challenges, my school community was really supportive. My friends and family were pretty supportive. But that looked a lot different for my brother. It looked a lot different for a lot of other younger people who had more complex experiences and more stigmatized experiences. It was like definitely a lot stronger, and there was a lot more literally people turning away from our family, and that was quite hard to see. But when it came time to me, I think they were pretty accepting, and not that I really opened up, to be honest, about a lot of it. I think I kept it pretty internal. But yeah, we're getting there. I think the positives of community is that they really have capacity to take care of the whole individual, and it can be so powerful to see a community provide that wraparound approach. And it's happened for, you know, Yeppoon time and time again after we've had disasters, and we had a few cyclones and the fires recently. And you did see the best of community in those circumstances. You could see that they would really pick up the people around them and form a really big support network. But you can also see, I think, the opposite, where it's quite exclusionary and single-minded. And yeah, that's really tough. It's kind of both truths, I think, at the same time.
At what point did you feel comfortable coming out to talk about your own mental health, and you saw it as an opportunity for a voice and to strengthen and help other people, as opposed to just going through your own experience?
I don't know. I'd still say I'm a little bit uncomfortable with it, depending on the audience. I think, yeah, there was a lot of healing that happened and validation that happened that took place that allowed me to kind of connect back in with my lived experience and give a voice to it. And it did take a bit of time and a bit of space from it to know that I, you know, yeah, could feel comfortable doing that. But yeah, there's been that. I think it changes audience to audience as well, though. Young people, for some reason, I just find when I saw the impact that it could have speaking in schools about my mental health, it really changes your perspective when you have a young person come up after you speak and tell you that they're going through something similar, or that they're a carer or something like that. It changes your perspective and allows you to heal, I think, a bit further by kind of turning something that was really painful for me into something that provides hope for others. Was just such a beautiful, like, healing moment in my journey.
Yeah,
it was really powerful. But
yeah. And so you're still quite active doing a lot of stuff with the schools?
Yeah, I try to go out here and then to kind of keep my feet on the ground. I think it's really important for me to not, I don't know, sit in my nice little office in the aircon and forget what it's like kind of on the ground, I suppose. And yeah, I love public speaking as well. So I think it's just a skill set that I enjoy kind of flexing every now and then. But yeah, I get the privilege of hearing a lot of people's stories and giving them the skills to share their stories is part of my role now. So I get to hear a lot of other people's stories and kind of have turned the tables a little bit and give that ability to others to share their voice and feel confident speaking up as well is a huge privilege of my role. So yeah, nice to do that kind of aspect.
Yeah. And tell us, Winton, you're obviously still very much engaged with youth today and what's going on. What are we seeing? What are some of the biggest challenges with the youth as it relates to, you know, the mental ill health they're experiencing, perhaps, or some of the trends that we're seeing?
I think one of the biggest challenges is that there's not enough hope in the system. I think our system is one that really quashes hope, and for a lot of different people, I think it quashes it for clinicians and for young people as well. But we need to be having more positive conversations about mental health and to really show a future where, you know, that's why telling a story is so powerful, because it's not because I say, I think it's partly because I say that I've been through hard times, but it's because I say that in spite of that, I'm here today and I'm doing these kinds of things which blow my mind away. So I think a little bit more hope would be really important for a lot of young people. I think that's what they, I'm hearing a lot that they kind of want that positivity and that self-empowerment in their mental health journeys and not feeling like they're a bystander. It's something I hear quite a lot. It's really important, and it was certainly important in my journey, I think, taking that ownership and feeling confident to advocate for myself and step up and having a really good network around me that I knew that I could kind of fall into was really just empowering and allowed me to kind of stretch those legs and really do what I needed to do to wrap that support around me and take those steps. And yeah.
Do you feel since you went through school, let's say high school to now, do you feel like we've even come a fair way in the last 5 years or so?
I think, we've come a really long way, but there's always work that needs doing and there's always things that we need to improve on. You know, young people are experiencing mental health more than they were 5 years ago, but a lot has changed. A lot of people are stepping up as advocates. We're sharing stories a lot more. There's a lot more connection, there's more help seeking as well, which is really good to see. But yeah, I think, and I think stigma has gone a long way as well. But we're finding a lot of self-stigma when we go out to schools now as well, which is really interesting that's kind of a part of people's journeys. I'm not sure if it's more or if they're just more aware of that kind of self-stigma piece. But yeah, it's kind of both truths at once. I think communities are changing, minds are shifting around mental health, but also there's so much that we need to do.
Well, on that, what do you think are some of the solutions? I know we've sort of said most aspects of the system need to be improved, but if you could have your magic wand and wave it and improve a few things that you think would lead to much better outcomes for young people as it relates to their mental health, what sort of things would that be?
I think we need community-led care a lot more common. It's something that I'm really interested in, and I think we've got a bit of a trickle-down approach to system and to services that just is not reaching communities that it really needs to reach. I think we need to be investing in the workforce a lot earlier on and supporting uni students, you know, psych students, things like, especially those people with a lived experience. It's really, I haven't graduated, and a lot of that is because of my journey with mental health, to be honest, entirely because of my journey with mental health. And because I don't think I was supported enough to really reach that goal. And I often wonder how many other, you know, potential budding psychologists or social workers, that's the other thing, is we really need to expand our idea of what a clinician is. I think we've got this idea that it should be restricted to psychologists and there's some wonderful, social workers do some incredible work. There's the peer workforce is expanding, but I think it could just expand so much more than it is now. And really expanding what support looks like instead of it just being this really strict pathway through a GP to a psychologist, and expanding that world up to include our social workers, our, you know, other peer workers, young people in the community. I don't know, just, yeah, expanding that out and really diversifying. There's some really good projects going on all around the country in mental health, and if we could put funding into those, it would just be, I think there's, yeah, a lot of people that are thinking the right things that are starting to make some progress in really the right direction, but it'll be really interesting to see where it goes, I think, in the next 5-10 years.
I mean, we're starting to see some good work and the numbers in the peer workforce improve and go up a lot, especially in the last few years, which is great to see. Have you seen, do you think it's developing quickly enough? Do you think the opportunities for people with lived experience now are, it's a really great time for them to come and be a part of the workforce to help create change?
Yeah, I think it's definitely on its way. It's still quite a small workforce, I believe, but it is bigger than, you know, than it was before, and definitely we're seeing a lot more people with lived experience. But we need, I think, to broaden our understanding of who can bring lived experience in. It's not just peer workers that can bring their lived experience into their work. It's really anyone, I think, and that is really beneficial. We need academics who have lived experience. We need researchers who have lived experience. We need teachers and the people who teach teachers. And we really, yeah, I think we need it in governance and policy making. We really need to expand what lived experience looks like and stop siloing it as much as we are, I think, to the peer workforce and the lived experience workforce as well.
What else do you think that we need to change as it relates to the system? If we could rebuild this thing, what would you do differently?
I think remove it from health system. I think the fact that it's, you know, really started in the health system has limited us in a lot of ways. And yeah, if we could kind of, I think it's hard, even if you removed it now, you wouldn't be able to kind of remove that, those origins. And yeah, but that would be something I think from the get-go that would be really cool to see. And then just giving the power back to consumers. I think the power is held in the mental health system by very few individuals. And it would be great to see that shared a little bit more with a lot of different people, not kind of, yeah, segregated to the elite of the mental health system. Would be really just incredible to see. Huge difference.
What about the funding? Do you feel like, I mean, funding seems to be a really important issue with especially NGOs that don't have a lot of resources.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the funding for mental health?
Yeah, it's, I mean, we need more of it is the bottom line, but I think we also need to be funding, we need to be funding evaluation and research and not just, I think we tend to fund just projects and tend to fund outcomes and not people, not really evaluation. It's really hard to get funding as small organizations for that side of project work, which is really important. We need to be knowing that what we're putting out there is actually beneficial for young people and not just funding it willy-nilly. Yeah, so I think that's really important. But yeah, we just need, I think, more into community-led. There's some really powerful projects going on that you wouldn't really know about, and it seems that funding just tends to go into the same organizations or the same kind of areas. And I think diversifying that would be so powerful, and putting that, yeah, it's about that power as well, I think, where the money goes. For sure. Yeah, and putting a bit more into our workforce as well is really important.
Tell us about what things are coming up for you moving forward. What exciting things have you got coming up that you're looking forward to?
I feel like I've worked so hard to be here this week. Yeah, I really don't know where my future is at the moment. It's a funny thing having started my career in mental health, and then, you know, I'm 22. I haven't graduated. I'm still figuring my life out. So I definitely... it's really a bit up in the air at the moment. I'm excited to keep working, to keep teaching young people how to share their stories. It's really, really powerful. So I'm keen to keep staying in that space. And then from, you know, after that, really, who knows? I did start my degree in politics, so maybe I'll end up back there. Maybe not. Who knows, really? I couldn't tell you.
No, that's cool. What about... if I get your thoughts about the digital world and the influence that that's having on kids in today, I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well before we wrap it up.
Yeah,
tell me about that and how that's changing and what we need to do to keep up with this stuff.
It's a really interesting world. I think young people really are at pioneers at the moment in this digital world where we're really, I mean, I'm nervous. I don't know what my future holds in terms of the digital space, and that can be really nerve-wracking because we just never have lived something like this before, and there's a lot of changes that keep going. Web3 is coming apparently, and that should be really exciting. Yeah, the digital space is really complex. It's ever-changing and it's really new. We don't have a lot of data or research around it, but we are finding that young people, it's really important space for connection amongst young people, and that's really kind of powerful. I think it's been a really important part of my journey, and it's important that I keep checking in with that world because it can be quite a hard place to be in the online space, but we're really figuring it out as we go. And I think we've moved away from the fear around phone use and your eyes turning square and all of that, and we're really looking at how social media and the online space can be used as a tool. And there's some really great services coming out online as well and digital that are already out as well, but I'm keen to see how we can bring a bit more light into that conversation. And, you know, our phones are a really powerful tool for connection, and they're a really powerful well-being tool if used correctly. And I think we need to put a bit more empowerment back into young people's hands around aspect of things and look at it as a tool and not this big, scary world, even though it is quite scary. It's scary for young people as well. It's scary for me at least. But yeah, I'm so keen for that to shift and be a bit more hopeful. I think long gone are the days where it was kind of the big bad wolf, and there are some really negative impacts, but there's also some really cool opportunities to utilize that a bit better.
I just think it can be used for a really good force for good. You know, the digital world and like you said, the tools available to kids. There's definitely a lot of stuff happening, a lot of innovation things are happening, a lot of wellness aspects to technology, which is great to see coming through. So trying to focus on them a bit more than the negatives, but we are still seeing a lot of kids, a lot of their time and energy and a lot of mental ill health coming from things on social and through cyberbullying and body shaming, all these sorts of things that are still happening. So it's still an interesting place to be navigating as a parent, as a child, and trying to find your place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really hard. And we just don't know a lot of that. You know, we don't know whether it's really negative for well-being or if that's just an assumption we've made. And I think a lot of it does come from, you know, I think anytime something new is introduced, there's always populations seem to have a bit of a backlash against it. So the jury's really out on whether that is what's happening or whether there is some really like truth behind the fact that it's, you know, maybe causing some mental ill health. But it definitely can be harmful to young people and it definitely can be really positive for young people. So it's really all about how we use it and how we engage with it. It is a tool, and like anything else, it can be used for good or for bad. But I think that kind of the fear mongering is like not going to help us in any way. I think we really need to go into those conversations with a really, you know, realistic view on the potential harmful effects, but also realizing that you're not going to take social media and the online space away at this point. You can't, I mean, I'm not going to leave my phone away. So how can we have that conversation? How can we bring young people into it and create a world that it will be beneficial and that it will young people at the decision-making table as well, and them guiding their kind of approach and sitting in the chair for sure.
Abby, two questions left. One is I want to get your thoughts on what's the most exciting thing you think about mental health system or mental health as a sector moving forward. What do you think is really going to be a game changer for mental health?
I think young people are going to be a game changer for mental health for sure. There's so many talented individuals coming up through see work, through peer work that are really just changing how we think about mental health and well-being, and will continue to change. And it'll be so exciting to see those people go through and move on in their journeys and the next generation come up. I think, it will just be a really fresh light. And we're seeing a lot more validity into young people's lived experience, their expertise in that space. And I really hope that the kind of top dogs of the mental health world really pass the mic down and embrace that and able to kind of see that. But I think, you know, shifting to that positive focus, and I think young people, they want to have conversations about mental health without feeling like it's a downer. I think they want to have fun conversations. They want to take ownership and be empowered by their mental health and not just have it be this huge conversation that can be really scary to kind of approach. So I see a lot of hope in the future, I think.
Well, I think it's fantastic. I think it's great that you're out there doing the amazing stuff that you're up to, especially going to share your story with young kids and young people. I think it's fantastic. I think we need to continue having people like yourself get out there and share that voice and encourage others to step up and try and seek help if that's what they need to do and reduce the stigma around that. But I think having young leaders like yourself out there doing the work you're doing is fantastic. So congratulations on that. And Abby, and last point I just want to ask for is if you wouldn't mind just sharing how people might be able to get in touch with you if they like what you're up to or want to get in touch and just know more about what you're doing, how would that be able to happen?
For sure. Really any of the social media sites. My name is Abby, spelled ABI. No two Bs, no IE, just three letters. And I'm on pretty much all the socials. To a varying amount. I'm a pretty private person. Yep. But if you see me around as well, always feel free to say g'day. I love having a yarn, chatting through things, and I'm really keen to kind of connect with people in this next year or so in particular. But on LinkedIn, on Instagram, I'm taking a hiatus from TikTok at the moment, so you cannot find me on there. I have deleted it, which I'm proud of, but it's been like a week, so we'll see how that goes. That's pretty much how you can find me, I think. Well,
perfect.
Carrier pigeon, whatever works.
Okay. Well, Abby, I think it's been really great talking to you and highlighting the things you've been up to, but also thanks for the courage and sharing your story and your journey throughout your experience in such a young life, 22 years of age, plenty left to go. And thanks for coming and thanks for having a yarn. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to share with your friends and colleagues. And if you know someone working in mental health that you'd like to see featured on the podcast, please email any suggestions to us at membership@anzmh.asn.au. You can also stay up to date on our socials at ANZMHA on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you next week.